If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 755. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about sea lions and frigate birds, tortoises and turtles, boobies and iguanas, as we go to the Galapagos Islands of Ecuador. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Ecuador and the Galapagos Islands. No guest to introduce for this episode, as it's going to be a solo episode. I am just recently back from the Galapagos Islands, and this was a bucket list trip, and I want to tell you about it. Before I do that, I should tell you that this was a sponsored trip. I was fortunate enough to be invited down there by Quasar Expeditions, and if you haven't heard of them, they've been around for quite a while. They've won best awards from Travel and Leisure Magazine, Afar, Condé Nast Traveler, etc. So they've been around for a while. They've been on my radar for a while. I don't know how long I've been thinking about a Galapagos trip, but if you go back in Amateur Traveler, we've done two other episodes on the Galapagos, and I was re-listening to those before I went, and I noticed that the one we did most recently, which was 2007, I told the guest that I thought we would get to the Galapagos the next year, so this trip took a little longer than was planned. I usually ask my guests, why should someone go to the Galapagos? And that is a pretty easy answer. If you like wildlife, this is a singular destination. Other places talk about being the Galapagos of Mexico or the Galapagos of this or the Galapagos of that, but the Galapagos just describes itself as the Galapagos. There's nothing quite like it. And one of the reasons is that it is a fairly isolated series of islands, and the wildlife there isn't afraid of people. And so you can be walking right through the middle of a nesting ground for birds, or you can go up on the beach and the sea lions will come up to you to see what you're up to, and even sometimes untie your shoelaces if they're playful and a little pup. So it was a destination that did not disappoint. It was on my bucket list, and if you like wildlife, it should be on yours as well. We've got a post on the Amateur Traveler site about going to the Galapagos as a budget destination, and to do that, you'd be doing that via a land cruise. You'd stay on one of the islands like Santa Cruz, which is in the middle, and then you'd go out and do day tours from there. And that is not what I did, nor is what I hear most people recommend. If you can, then doing something like I did on the Quasar MV Evolution, which is a liveaboard boat, is a better experience. It's a cruise, but when I say cruise, you probably got the wrong mental model, because it's a large ship for the Galapagos, meaning that when it's full, it holds 32 passengers. And it wasn't full on my particular trip. It only held 24, but there are other ships there that are 12 passenger boats, for instance, you know, one Zodiac full of people. And so there, this sort of experience is a very typical Galapagos experience, the small boat cruise experience. And that's going to allow you to get to multiple islands. And one of the reasons you want to do the boat versus something land-based is during the course of a week, we actually sailed 410 nautical miles to go and explore different islands. And so there's advantages in having somebody else do that while you're sleeping, rather than try and go motor out to different islands and then back during the day. So I'm going to break this show down into three parts. I'm going to talk about what the experience is like. I'm going to give you an idea of the itinerary. The itineraries are relatively fixed. The way it works is Galapagos is predominantly a national park, an Ecuadorian national park, because it is owned by the country of Ecuador. You're going to fly in either through Quito, which is the capital, or Guayaquil, which is a coastal city and the largest city in Ecuador. And then you're going to fly into one of two airports in the Galapagos. And the trip that I did flew into San Cristobal Airport on the island of the same name. And then we flew out of the island of Baltra, which is closer to the center. The way the rules work in the Galapagos National Park is that a boat isn't allowed to go back to the same spot, but every 2 weeks. And so what the Evolution does, for instance, what Quasar does, is they have 2 one-week itineraries. I did the eastern islands, and then the next week would be more of the western islands. And then both of them would stop one day in Santa Cruz Island, which is in the middle, to see the giant tortoises. But then the rest of the itinerary would be different. And that's going to be true for all boats. And if they replace the Evolution, which they probably will in a year or two, with something newer, it won't be bigger, because they also limit that you have a license for a certain number of passengers, and it's very difficult to get a new license for a new boat. They're relatively fixed in terms of how many people are going out on these liveaboard boats. And you can replace your boat, but you have to replace it with something of the same size. So I'm going to talk about the itinerary, and then I want to talk about the boat and that experience. And then at the last part, I'm going to talk about doing this in 2021 during the end, hopefully, of the COVID epidemic and what that was like. But I'm going to put that at the end, because some of you will be listening to this in 2031 or whatever, when that is hopefully much less relevant. In terms of understanding the itinerary, remember that most of the itinerary is going to revolve around wildlife. And so you're going to go to a particular island or a particular place, usually with some animal in mind, some encounter that the guides, the naturalists, who are all licensed naturalists, the naturalists on the Evolution, had all been with the ship, had all been with the company for at least 16 years, so they really knew their stuff. And when we went to a specific spot, they would have in mind that we're going to this island to see the blue-footed boobies, and when we go to this island, we're going to go snorkel with turtles, and when we go to this island, we're going to see the giant tortoises. And so they've laid out the itinerary with that sort of thing in mind. Predominantly wildlife experiences, a few non-wildlife, but predominantly wildlife experiences. The other thing to know is that the Galapagos are volcanic islands, as they would be. They're islands out there in the middle of the ocean that are the top of large volcanic mountains that have come up from the sea floor. And there's a hot spot in the Galapagos, similar that you'd find, for instance, in Hawaii. As the Earth plates move, in this case the Nazca plate, as it moves towards South America, it moves about the same rate that your fingernails grow. Different islands over the course of millions of years come up from the surface as that plate goes over this hot spot in the Earth's crust. And so the islands in the east that I was predominantly at are the older islands. The islands in the west are predominantly the newer islands and the more volcanically active. So if you really want to see volcanic activity and more of that sort of thing, then you want to do the opposite week that I did. You want to do that week that goes a little more to the west, to some of the larger, newer, taller islands. And then I was over here on the older, smaller islands. We arrived at the city of San Cristobal on San Cristobal Island, and very quickly, we flew in the morning, got in just a little bit before noon. They got us out to the boat. We had lunch, and you know, no sooner had we had lunch that we got on the pangas, or small boats, in this case, zodiacs, and went to a beach. These are islands, so a lot of our experiences would be beach-related landings from the zodiac, sometimes a dry landing where you're getting off on something like concrete steps, and more often than not, a wet landing where you're just pulling up the Zodiac onto a white sand beach or a black sand beach and getting out and getting your feet wet as you get onto the island. So one of the things I would recommend is I would recommend you bring something like water shoes. I found that that worked very well. Water shoes with a good sole, because you might get off the boat, get into the water, but then go for a little hike. And so it was useful to have something with a good thick sole on it. So our very first landing was really just up the coast of San Cristobal Island. And it felt like at this point, even though we were up maybe an hour or two from the airport, that we were on an island of our own. There were no other boats there, and we pulled into a white sand beach, went through some old lava, and right away we ran into sea lions. And almost all of our landings on beaches ended up with an encounter with sea lions. One of our naturalists, Christina, said that the day that you wake up and you don't run into sea lions, you're home. Even though everyone had told me that the animals behaved differently in the Galapagos, I'd have to say that first landing was when I first understood it, because I'm used to seeing sea lions. These Galapagos sea lions are very similar to the California sea lions that I see all the time when I go to Monterey or San Francisco. But when we go there, we see sea lions that are largely just lying around. And they were also doing that on San Cristobal, on places in the bay there outside the city. In fact, the city actually built a fence to keep them out of the town, because they would go into the town and into the stores. They're just really not afraid of people. And so when we went there, they were not at all surprised to see us. It would seem a little bit curious. And we were standing, you know, you're supposed to stay about 6 feet away from them. They don't necessarily know that. And so they would sometimes come closer to us, and we had closer encounters than 6 feet away, but you're not supposed to do that. And so we're taking pictures with sea lions. And even though I've seen many, many sea lions in my life, it was a very different experience. And we then took the opportunity to jump in the water and just do some swimming time. We'd been flying here now for a couple days, and we were in the Galapagos. The weather was nice. The water was warm. And we went into the water. And that was when we had our second real surprising sea lion encounter. Joan, my wife, and I are with one other member of our party. And she says something like, "Look." And I'd say a full adult male sea lion was swimming in the water straight towards us like a rocket. And we turned around, and before we even had any chance to react, it just kind of came nose to nose with the other person in our group, and then just veered around her and went to the beach. And it was just the most surprising thing. It's not something I expect to see. And that sense of wonder that we had in that encounter, once we were over the shock and the fear of it, is something that stayed with us for the whole trip. So picture this white sand beach. There are frigate birds soaring overhead. These are birds with like a 4-foot wingspan, gorgeous birds, although it turns out that they're kind of mean. I'll talk about that later. And they're just soaring up there. There are these multicolored red crabs, Sally Lightfoot crabs on all the rocks, sea lions. There's tracks on the sand of iguanas that you can see where they have dragged their tail along the sand. We didn't encounter any on that trip, but we would. So that's the first day. We're in the Galapagos. We've had our first encounter. Our second day, we go off to see the land iguanas. That's really our target. And so we go off and see these beautiful yellow large iguanas, and I say large, they're probably 2.5 feet long or something like that at the largest, on the island of South Plazas Island, which is just off Santa Cruz Island. So now we're in the center of the island, Santa Cruz being the centermost island. And we go up and we see an island that is predominantly scrub brush, tall cactuses, mostly land iguanas, a few marine iguanas, and of course sea lions, because again, we're in the Galapagos. We did a dry landing this time onto some stone steps, and there were sea lions right there to greet us. One of the sea lions that looked like a shark might have taken a little bite out of recently, and we did see some sharks moving along the water towards the sea lions as we were there. I say there are only tall cactuses because a land iguana's favorite food is cactus. And so it's difficult for a small cactus to get started on the island. The national park is trying to regrow some cactuses on the area, because a lot of these islands had problems with other invasive species coming in, like goats or feral pigs or rats, many of which have been eradicated on some of the smaller islands already. And now they're trying to restore the ecosystem by bringing back in iguanas or tortoises, and they're doing some planting of cactuses on that island. But you walk up past the beach, we walk over to the cliffs on the other side of the island, which is a bachelor colony of sea lions. So these are the sea lions that lost the fight to be the head honcho, and so these male sea lions are off by themselves on the other side of the island. And then there's a cliff just filled with birds of all sorts. We've got boobies. There's three different types of boobies in the Galapagos Islands. At this point, we were seeing predominantly Nazca boobies. There's Nazca boobies, red-footed boobies, and blue-footed boobies, and I'll introduce the other two in a bit. But all three of them are fishing birds, and so you'll see them swoop down and dive into the water to hunt for fish. And then you'll also see sometimes the frigate birds dive onto the boobies to try and steal the fish. As I say, not necessarily the nicest birds. They're frigate birds because they're named after pirates, because that's one of the ways they have of eating, is stealing food from other birds. We saw frigate birds, cactus, finch, and ground finch. Finches, of course, is one of the reasons why the Galapagos got so well known, because the finches were one of the things that led Darwin to his theory of natural selection, and how the different finches on the different islands had different size beaks, for instance, or different sizes depending on what food was available to them, that certain finches would thrive there and other ones would not. Actually, recent studies have shown that that is not something that happens necessarily just over the course of millions of years, but even over the course of the cycle of the El Nino years, the weather phenomenon that happens in the Pacific, where you get warmer waters sometimes and therefore rainy weather some years and dry weather other years, something we know very well out here in California. And even over the course of that cycle of dry and wet years, different finches will survive better than others. And so you can see that happen in real time in the Galapagos, as the researchers have discovered here over the last decades. That afternoon, we did our first snorkeling experience. And I'd have to say, I thought I was going to the Galapagos to see iguanas and giant tortoises. And I did, and they were great. But some of my most memorable experiences on the whole trip were in the water. And they built day after day. So the first one, we got in the water and it was a little murky and there weren't that many fish. And then we swam down a ways and then we were suddenly in the middle of, you know, 50 different surgeon fish that are gray fish with a bright yellow tail, for instance. And also saw our first reef shark that day. But it would get better than that. And then that night, we went to a really small island, the island of Mosquera, which is just north of the airport in Baltra. And literally, you can walk the length of the island, probably 10 minutes or so. And there were really just volcanic rock, ice plant, a white coral beach, and then, of course, sea lions. But the sea lions there were putting on a water acrobatics show for us. They were swimming in the waves and jumping out as if they were at SeaWorld, except this is just what they were doing. They were doing this before we got there, and they kept doing it while we watched. And it was fascinating to watch, because I've just never seen this behavior in the wild with sea lions, and it was great fun. And that was the first day. And I want to talk about shipmates, too. One of the things that makes this trip great isn't just the sea lions, it isn't just the snorkeling, it isn't just the tortoises, it's the people you're with. And when you're on one of these small group tours, they divided us into two groups, basically one per zodiac of about 12 people in each. I guess it was 11 people in each, and then there were two other people who were not predominantly English-speaking who went off with a different naturalist. And you got to know that group fairly well. You were doing things with them all week. You got to know the others as well because you're on a small ship. And something about a trip like this that is adventurous tends to bring people who are interesting. And so, you know, this one's a designer. That one does competition ballroom dancing. This one's a trauma surgeon. That one has run an Antarctic marathon. We had just fascinating conversations with these people. And I found that on these expedition class ships, these small group chips that are adventure-based and wildlife-based, that it tends to attract a really fun group of people. And that was the case on this cruise as well. The next day, we went to Sombrero Chino, which is an island that is shaped like a Chinese hat, and we saw penguins. We didn't see very many of them on this particular trip, but we saw a couple penguins. We snorkeled with some later on, but they're the northernmost penguins in the world, because we're now getting really close to the equator here, and we'll cross over the equator the next day, and you can find these penguins actually north of the equator, but really close to the equator here. We did another wet landing. We saw sea lions, of course, a great heron. And then we went predominantly to Sombrero Chino to see the marine iguanas. And so there were large colonies of marine iguanas, which are not as bright and colorful as the land iguanas. They're more dark in color, like the dark lava rock that we would see around the island. They were all out basking in the sun because they are reptiles, and so they do need to regulate their heat. As we landed in the island, we also saw tiger rays. Two small males were trying to mate with a female in the shallow water, and so that was something you don't see every day at home. As we went snorkeling back in the same area, we saw more sharks. We saw a white-tip reef shark, again, probably about 5 feet long or something like that. That's going to be the most common one we saw while we were in the Galapagos, and saw our first glimpse of a turtle. Not a really good, clear picture of a turtle, but we could tell it was a turtle that was swimming off in the distance below us in the water that wasn't as clear at that point. And off the afternoon, we were going to go off to Santiago Island. And again, we were supposed to see the Galapagos fur seals was the main thing we were going to see there. But we got distracted along the way because we ran into a group of orcas. They're resident orcas in the Galapagos. They're there all the time, but it's a large area of the Galapagos. So the crew said they see them maybe once every year and a half. And we watched as they were hunting. In fact, we saw a turtle that was unfortunate to get in their way and was now an ex-turtle. But we watched them and followed them for a while in the water, just seeing these magnificent orcas as they were swimming along. And then did get to Santiago Island and saw the fur seals. And I say fur seal, that is what they call them. The Galapagos fur seals, though, are actually a different breed of sea lion. They're not a seal. They have the external ears that a sea lion would have. But these are still endangered animals. They were nearly hunted to extinction for their beautiful furs. We also saw more marine iguanas on that island, and then, you know, plovers and blue herons and pelicans and oyster catchers and frigate birds and all sorts of birds. If you are a birder, this is definitely someplace that you're going to want to go. Now, you may notice that pattern here of someplace on land in the morning and then someplace on land in the afternoon and in the water in the middle of the day. And one of the reasons for that is the national park rules are that often the liveaboard boats really stay off the islands from sort of 10 to 4 and do the islands at the earlier and later in the day, because for one thing, they don't have to go as far as the people who are on those day boats do. And so we would often do our water activity in the middle of the day. Well, that's also the heat of the day. And so sometimes we would just take a siesta, for instance, after lunch and take a break. And sometimes we would go off and do water activity, and it just depended on the day and what there was to do. Next day, we went to Genovesa Island, and this was an ancient caldera. And so you sail into this old caldera, and there are the volcanic walls around you. And it's a nesting area, especially for frigate birds and red-footed boobies. Red-footed boobies are different from the Nazca boobies and the blue-footed boobies because those two nest on the ground, but the red-footed booby has a prehensile web feet, and they can grasp tree branches, and so they tend to nest in trees. So we watched the red-footed boobies, and then the frigate birds. I said that they were a little mean. Well, I think one of the reasons they may be mean is they may get picked on by the other birds, because the male frigate bird has this big red pouch that it inflates under its beak in front of its chest to show the female birds that it is virile and really one you ought to mate with. And it's, you know, about the size of, I don't, not quite a basketball, maybe a volleyball in size. And it has to be in good shape if you want to have a chance with the ladies. And so you'd see the frigate birds there would be blowing up their big red pouch to show to the ladies that they were the right one to continue on the species here. and they would then, you know, make signs as they are calling out to the ladies. The boobies have this odd thing, especially the Nazca boobies and the blue-footed boobies. They nest on the ground, and so they're building their nest, and it's really not much of a nest at all, but the male will offer the female a stick. You know, do you want to use this stick for your nest? And the female may or may not accept this stick. If it's not a very good stick, then they're going to, you know, reject it. And if they accept it, then they're, you know, part of your courtship is working out okay. And, you know, we're watching this, and sometimes we're looking at this pathetic stick the booby is trying to offer its mate, and we're, yeah, that's not going to work, dude. You know, that's just not going to cut it at all. And so it's funny watching the behavior here. And they're really not ending up with all that much of a nest because they're really nesting right on the ground anyway. But there's this whole courtship here with the sticks and the boobies. That afternoon, they broke out the sea kayaks and we kayaked around the caldera. And then we had a snorkeling option, and there were two options. You could either go to an area that was deep, kind of murky, and also a little choppy in terms of the water, but there was a 75% chance you would see hammerhead sharks. But I opted for the other one, where they said there would be more fish and a chance to see fur seals and swim with fur seals. And sure enough, a fur seal showed up. I turned around, and there, I don't know, 5 feet away from me was a fur seal floating upside down in the water, looking at me, just kind of watching me and what I was doing as the bubbles were coming out of its fur and cascading up to the surface. It was a surreal experience for sure. And that night, we went over to the Prince Philip Steps. These are steps named after the late Prince Philip of England, who had visited the island and climbed up out of the caldera and onto the plains that are the top of the caldera, where we saw much more bird nesting sites, some of the same birds, but we were really on the hunt for the Galapagos owl. And the Galapagos owl is unique in the sense that it is an owl that hunts in the daytime. And sure enough, we did manage to find one at the end of our walk. And the other group happened to be there when it actually made a kill for one of the other smaller birds. I think it was a finch that it caught. The next day, we went to Isla Seymour Norte, and that's where we finally got to see the blue-footed boobies. And the blue-footed boobies are adorable, not just because they have blue feet, but because they're very proud of these blue feet. And so the way the blue-footed booby goes to interest a mate is it does this little blue-footed booby dance. It will hold up its right foot. You see how blue my feet are, and then it'll hold up its left foot, look at my beautiful feet, and then hold up its right foot, and then hold up its left foot, and then it'll, you know, raise its wings or whatever, just showing off, look what a wonderful specimen I am, and I'm your guy. They also do this whole thing with the sticks and the nesting and things like that, and they're just fascinating to watch. The female will make a honking noise in return, and the male will make a whistling noise as they're doing this little dance, and it was just so fun to watch. And then we went down to Santa Fe Island, and there was a beautiful secluded bay that we went down. Again, had more sea lion experiences, including that was one of the ones where the sea lion pup was untying the shoes of one of our shipmates there, curious, just like a little puppy. We went to see the Santa Fe iguana, which another type of land iguanas, again with the yellow and brown coloring. And then spent some more time in the kayaks in the secluded lagoon, kayaking above reef sharks and a couple tortoises swimming in the water. Finally get to see a little closer view of them, some mackerel swimming near the surface. The next day, we went to Floriana Island. And Floriana Island is an odd island. It's one of the ones that was settled a little later. All of the Galapagos really weren't settled, haven't really been settled even for 100 years. There were pirates and such who would use them as base before that, but in terms of permanent residence, they haven't had people all that long. And some of the first people who went to Floriana Island, you know, in the middle of nowhere here off the coast of Ecuador, were odd people. We heard about a German dentist / nudist / philosopher / vegetarian who came out here with his mistress. He was very nervous about tooth infection, even though he was a dentist, so he had all his teeth pulled before he headed out to this corner of the world. And all of these stories that they were telling us the night before about Floriana Island seemed to end with, and they were never seen again. There seemed to be some problems with the people interacting on the island. We did not come there for the violence. We came there for the couple things. We came there for three things. One is, it's where they have the post office. And if you've had friends who've gone to Galapagos, you've probably heard about the post office. There is this place where you can drop off a postcard, and someone else who is going to where that postcard needs to go will take it out of this barrel and they'll hand deliver it. You're not supposed to drop it in the mail. You're supposed to hand deliver it. And this goes back to the tradition of when the whalers were in these islands, and they've been whaling for a while, and now one ship is about, for instance, to head back around the Horn and back to the eastern coast of the U.S., then they would go here and they would look for what mail needs to go out to that part of the world. And they've continued that tradition since. And so we picked up a postcard for someone that we're supposed to drop off when we get to Virginia, when we go to see our daughter, and others are dropping off other postcards from people in their area. But the most memorable part of Floriana is this is where we get two different amazing and probably the highlight of my trip snorkel experiences. The first one was when we were snorkeling with turtles, and they are just so beautiful and they're just so majestic as they swim through the water, as they seem to almost fly through the water. There are different size turtles. You could see the young turtles who didn't have a lot of, you know, crust all over their shell, and then some large turtles that were maybe even 6 feet in length or whatever. They turtles keep growing and they live quite long, and just a stunning experience to swim with sea turtles. And I thought there was nothing that could top that until we did our second snorkel outing of the same day and we swam with sea lions. I have swum with sea lions before. I did in the Galapagos of Mexico in the Sea of Cortez between Baja, Mexico, and mainland Mexico. But it wasn't this memorable experience. There they told us, you know, some of the pups may be interested and may come out and swim around you and may come up to your mask and things like that. And they did more with the other group than they did with mine. In this situation, it was just a circus of sea lions swimming around us, literally swimming circles around us at times. And it wasn't just the pups. It was the pups, and then it was the females, and it was the males at times, which was a little intimidating because they're quite large. And just having fun. The water was a little rougher because they are bored if the water is calm. And so we were someplace where the surf was a little more challenging for you if you were not a strong swimmer. But of course, we were doing all of our snorkeling in wetsuits with short sleeves and short legs. Although the smart people like my wife had paid attention when Quasar had recommended getting a longer garment to go underneath that had long sleeves and also long legs in it. A couple reasons for that. It's easier to get the wetsuit on and off. It gives you a little more warmth in the water, but also gives you sun protection because we are near the equator, and I came back with some bad sunburns on my ankles from that time that we're in the water doing snorkeling. And that was our last snorkel experience. And so they really kind of built up from the very first time we got in the water was not as impressive. And then it got more interesting and then more interesting and more interesting. And then you ended with this last experience here where you had two different amazing experiences with the turtles and the sea lions. We did another wet landing elsewhere on the island and saw a brackish lagoon where there were some flamingos. Not a lot of flamingos in the Galapagos, about 500, I think, in the Galapagos. And we went to a beach, did a little hike over to the next beach, which is a turtle nesting area. Now, turtles will hatch on this beach. We were there in May, and a lot of the turtles had already hatched, but you could see some of the tracks from some that had hatched really just even like the night before, but they normally will hatch at night. And so we really didn't expect to see any, although we did have one experience with the frigate birds are looking and circling around, and they're looking for the baby turtles so that they can eat them. And they're looking for the flies that will start to accumulate as a turtle starts to break out. And while we were there, at least one turtle was a lunch for a frigate bird. The odds are against you if you were a young turtle. Of every 1,000 turtles that hatch, only one of them will live to maturity. And so they are an important part of the food chain, but honestly, we were rooting for the turtle and not the frigate bird. And then our last full day, we went to Santa Cruz Island. And as I say, each week they'll do the trip to Santa Cruz Island where you go up to the highlands. So now you're seeing not just scrub, brush, and cactus, but you actually see balsa trees and other significant trees as you go higher up in the altitudes. And then you get to a place where it is a meeting ground for the giant tortoises. And I say it's a mating ground for the giant tortoises. We saw two giant tortoises working on making other giant tortoises. The males are much, much bigger than the females. So we saw an older male, had to be older because of its size, that was maybe 6 feet from end to end, and a female that was probably a third that size. And, you know, took our obligatory pictures. And they're an amazing animal. They just don't seem practical. I just don't know who thought of this design. They move relatively slowly. I know they're armored, but they live quite long. We don't know exactly how long Galapagos tortoises live because people haven't been in the Galapagos for all that long. But we know like 100 years, 150 years or something like that. We did stop on our way back in the boat in a lava tube. And if you're not familiar with lava tubes, so all of the islands, as I say, are volcanic. And one of the features of volcanic islands that is quite common, you can see this in Hawaii as well, for instance, is as lava is flowing slowly down the surface of the island, then the top of it will cool faster because it's exposed to the air and it will crust over. But the lava that's flowing will keep flowing underneath this crust until eventually there's no lava coming, and then that tube the lava is flowing into will empty out. And sometimes that tube is, you know, big enough that a kid can crawl in. This one was more like 20 feet in diameter in most places. And so we got to walk through this lava tube that was relatively long. At one point, it did get small enough that if you wanted to continue on that way, you had to crawl on your hands and knees under a real short area. But it was a nice chance to see some of the volcanic formations. You'd see more of that again if you went to the western part of the islands. We went back to the ship and packed up and did our final toasts and, you know, saw the video that the naturalists had made of our trip. And then the next day, since we're all packed, we're not going to do any water activities, but they put us on a panga, put us out on one of those zodiacs. We went out to the mangrove swamps along the shore near the Baltra Airport and watched various rays and turtles and the birds nesting in these mangrove swamps. I didn't realize the way mangrove swamps work. So the mangrove can be in brackish or salt water, even though salt water would kill most plants. And what it does is it takes a lot of that salt and isolates it in particular leaves that then fall off and die. And those are almost the sacrificial leaves from the particular tree. So that gives you an idea. That's kind of a week-long activity in terms of what we're doing. And all that time, I mentioned we were on the Evolution. That's the name of the ship that we're on for Quasar. And just give you a little idea what that is. The cabins are comfortable, not huge cabins. We were in the smallest of the cabins, I think, or one of the smaller ones. And so we had, you know, a bed, a decent size bathroom, some place to hang up some clothes, and a nightstand. As the cabins got a little larger, you'd have a desk or something like that as well. But we weren't spending a whole lot of time in the cabins. And with all the outdoor activity in the sun, I would go into the cabin and I would fall asleep immediately. So very comfortable cabins. We were always drying something because we were, you know, doing so many water activities. And so there was a place you could hang up clothes there, or you could also hang them up on the deck. So space for 32 people in terms of the cabins for the passengers. And then there is the main deck has a dining room in the back where everyone can seat, which mostly buffet serving for lunch and breakfast. Particularly enjoyed the breakfasts. The lunches were good. The dinner service would be served plated and brought to the table. You usually have a couple different choices. Quite often it would be a seafood and a non-seafood would be your choices. You know, omelet station at breakfast, four different types of fresh breads baked at breakfast, and always fresh bread served with everything. And lots of salad served at various meals. For the people who were vegetarian, they would make special options to make sure that they had something to eat. And then behind that dining room was the alfresco dining. And so that was a deck that was actually more fun to dine at. And that was out covered and out in the breezes and just beautiful weather when we were there. We were there in May, and I would recommend May. And our guide said that was one of their favorite seasons. It is warmer before that in the year and quite warm. The water temperatures would get warmer. And then the currents shift in terms of where they're coming from the north, and instead they start coming from the south, and so the waters get cooler, the weather gets cooler, the water gets a little rougher later on in the year after May. And so that's when you're going to find more whales coming in to feed. And so there's advantages of coming in that time period. But the water's going to be a little rougher. It's going to be a little cooler for snorkeling. And so May is that nice in-between season where the weather was really nice. The water temperature was fine. It was warm in the middle of the day. Never really needed a coat at all during the time that we were there. We didn't see a lot of rain. You'll see rain in other seasons that we didn't have. But so we would often eat out in the alfresco dining for lunch or breakfast, which was covered but open to both see the scenery as well as the sea breezes and such. And then in front of that, towards the bow, would be the large community room where the naturalist presentations would happen every night, as they told us, you know, tomorrow we're going to do these three trips in this order, and this landing is going to be a dry landing, and so you need to have good walking shoes, and this one's going to be a wet landing, so plan accordingly, and we're going to go directly snorkeling from there, so if you want to get in the water, wear your swimsuit, and all of those sort of instructions, as well as they would tell us more about, you know, the particular wildlife we'd be seeing. So they would tell us about the boobies, or they'd tell us about the frigate birds or something like that during those presentations, as well as while we were out with them. And all the times that we were off the ship, we were with one of the naturalists. We had three naturalists. I don't know that I said that. We had Bolo and Lulu and Christina. And Lulu was the one who had been there the least amount of time, and she'd been there 16 years. So very, very accomplished and knowledgeable people, and great fun to hang around with, who still have somehow maintained their excitement. You know, when we saw the orca, for instance, that they only see every year and a half, they were just beside themselves with glee. And so they're doing something that they really love doing, and they really love showing you their islands. They're all the naturalists you're going to find in the Galapagos are Ecuadorian. That is the rule. And so you're always going to run into somebody who this is their country that they're showing off. And the national park does a great job of preserving the islands. They have, you know, tough rules in many cases, but it's not one of those destinations that I want to tell you, oh, you have to get there now before it's ruined. I honestly think if you wait 10 years, it's going to be the same or even in some ways a little better. They're still doing projects to try and get it back to the natural state in some places. They've, you know, done these things where they've done these campaigns where they try and get the rats off this island or the goats off that island or whatever. So very well maintained. The only thing that's putting more pressure on it is some of more of that land tourism, because it's not quite as limited as the liveaboard boats are. But I was talking about the boat. Further ahead in the boat is going to be the area where you can do some sunbathing, but also ahead of that is where you're going to get on and off your wetsuits as you go up towards the bow. As you go up one more level in the back, you're going to find the happy deck, and that's really where the bar is, and that's the other communal living space, and it's out open to the breeze and open to the winds, but covered so that it has some shade, and that was probably one of the most popular places to hang out and just chat with your other passengers, and they would always have snacks and, you know, fresh juice when we came back, for instance, or people could get something from the bartender if they wanted. Alcoholic drinks generally not included, extra cost for that, or you could buy a package. And then that alfresco dining deck, that would become the deck that you would be boarding on and off the pangas on from. And so you'd get, you know, when we're not doing meals there, they would clear that off. You'd get your life jacket on. You might leave your water shoes there and a set of cubbies and grab those as you headed down into the panga. Every time you're getting on and off the ship, you're doing it on a zodiac. You're doing it on these pangas. And just to put this in perspective, they don't really ever tie up that zodiac when they're going, you're getting on and off it. They really just take the outboard motor and drive it into the ship. And then you're stepping over, and you're always grabbing someone's hand, or actually their forearm. You're doing a forearm grab as you're getting on and off these vessels. But it does bring up the issue of mobility. I say you don't have to wait to go, because it's not going to be in good shape if you wait, but you may not be in as good a shape if you wait. And this is a trip that I would recommend doing, at least for your first time, when you have some good mobility. I do it after the knee, after you have that knee surgery. For instance, we had one of our shipmates who had a knee pop out and couldn't do some of the activities. It's not like you have to be in good physical shape, but it's helpful if you have good mobility. Just getting on and off the Ponga, you know, you're getting on and off a moving boat is something that was more challenging if you don't have good mobility. And so, you know, don't put this trip off too long. I think you'll enjoy it more if you go sooner. Unless, of course, you do need that knee surgery, in which case, get the knee surgery, get better, and then go to the Galapagos. And then the last thing I wanted to talk about is 2021, because I did this trip this year as we get now into what I'm hoping is the tail end of this pandemic. And that had its challenges and it had its benefits. So the challenge is that flying internationally, and this is my first time I've gotten on a plane since 2019, is more challenging this year. We needed to have proof of vaccination or a COVID test to get into Ecuador. We needed to have proof of a recent COVID test to get into the Galapagos, even if you were vaccinated. And the problem with that is that it had to be within the last 4 days, and they wanted you to come down a few days early. So we had to get a test no later than Tuesday afternoon because we were flying on Thursday morning and we were flying again to the Galapagos on Saturday. And that, in our case, did not give our health provider enough time to get our COVID results back to us before we got to the airport. We got them in time to go to Galapagos, but that became more nerve-wracking because there was a misunderstanding at the airport with the airline we were flying, which was United, who thought we needed to have proof of a negative COVID test. So we did do some running around the airport in a panic, wondering if we were going to get to the Galapagos, because we were now thinking we needed to have a COVID test. We needed to get it done today. We couldn't get it done at either of the quick turnaround testing places in the airport because the only tests they would do that would pass were not quick turnaround. They were 2 days. So we did have some of our shipmates who actually got like up to 3 different tests from different providers just to make sure they would get results in time for the trip. So more of a hassle that way. We were flying with masks. We were given alcoholic wipes to wipe down our areas as we got onto the planes. That was all really fine. Everybody was well behaved. As we got onto the boat, we were all wearing our masks for at least the first couple days, 2-3 days inside, you know, not so much outside as per the guidelines. But everybody, and by the time that we were doing this cruise, this was their 14th cruise, and everybody on the passengers, except for 2 children, were all vaccinated fully, and all of the crew had had at least 1 shot. And so once we got on the boat and we were with each other for a while, you know, long enough that nobody comes down with any symptoms, it really became like a little break from the pandemic. The crew was still, you know, that wasn't around us that often would still wear the masks. We were still asked to wear our masks as we were in the buffet line to be polite to the people who were the servers who weren't spending that much time with the passengers. And everybody was good about following that. We had temperature checks twice a day. So that was something that we could do automatically at the hotel director's desk. But largely, it was like normal life. It was very interesting. And the other thing that's interesting is that the Galapagos is really just recovering now from COVID. They are highly vaccinated. Both the residents are there to a high degree, but we weren't really allowed to interact with them because of the protocols. So we didn't spend any time in town shopping as you normally did, and did instead a time out on a remote beach. And also, when we were on these remote beaches, if we saw one other boat, that was unusual. So many of the times we had, you know, the whole island to ourselves. There were a few times we saw another boat, and, you know, honestly, after a while, it's just like, what are they doing on our island? But it was quite different because they really don't have the same number of visitors this year that they had 2 years ago, and maybe that they'll have next year. So it turned out to be actually a really great time to go, even if it was more of a hassle to get there. I have at least one long blog post about the trip and all the different things we did day by day that's on the Amateur Traveler site, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But I'm going to ask myself the same sort of questions that people would ask in terms of, you're standing in the prettiest spot, where are you standing and what are you looking at? It had to be one of those days. Often we would end the day at some beautiful, remote, white sand beach with the sunset in the distance and the ship silhouetted against the sunset. And it was just gorgeous. We would be in the water frolicking, maybe being joined by sea lions, maybe not. It was just idyllic. And especially after a year, and what a year the last year has been, that was pretty darn great. One thing that makes me laugh, the animals, the blue-footed boobies, they are just hilarious. Just watching them go through this little dance as they're showing off their feet is pretty priceless. And if I had to summarize the Galapagos Islands in three words, it would definitely be remote and wildlife and wonderful. And that's my experience. It is a place that I have wanted to go to for so long, and you know, there's always the danger that when you do that, it's going to disappoint. This is not a trip for everybody. If you're not into wildlife, don't do this trip. But if you are, it is really something that ought to be on your bucket list. Thanks, as always, to the patrons of the show who help support the show through patreon.com. Enjoyed hanging out with them again last Saturday for our monthly Zoom call. Patrons of the show get an ad-free version and usually get it a little early, although not quite as early with this one as it took a while to put it together. I heard from Jeff Ulfs about the show we did recently on Big Bend National Park, and Jeff being an ex-National Park Ranger, I am never surprised to hear him comment on a National Park episode. Surprised there was no mention that Rio Grande is a National Wild and Scenic River, which is officially a separate unit of the National Park system. One correction, Big Bend is not the only national park area in the contiguous U.S. that is an International Dark Sky Park. Joshua Tree is one along with others. And Jeff says, although I do not believe him, that rattlesnakes are cool. Thanks so much, Jeff. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. If you haven't been looking at the pictures on this episode, go check out the blog post at amateurtraveler.com that will show you the pictures of what I've been talking about on this episode. Pictures of the Galapagos are great. And as always, thanks so much for listening.